All right, we're going to get started here. The last session of our, whatever we call this, forum, seminar about the hymnal. We've been talking about some characteristics of the hymnal. We're going to talk about editing today. We have Matt Harbor here, who's one of our editors, one of the involved in the music part of it, really, I mean, involved a lot in that. Matt is quite a talented kid. He's also my step-nephew, right? So I'm real proud of him that he's in the family. When he was born, oh, it was a great day. No. Anyway, and he's going to explain the music editing policy. And we're going to say a few words about the lyric editing policy after that. And if we have some time left over, and we think that we will, we're going to sing a few hymns that we think have the best chance of being top 40 in Churches of Christ. We think there are hits waiting to happen. And so we want to sing. I mean, I don't know if we want to, you know, some of them we would want to introduce in the big group, but we're going to take advantage of that now. So anyway, Matt.
Should we say that a lot of this is in the hymnal in the preface too? If somebody wants to read more about it.
Well, thanks to everyone for coming. As was mentioned, my name's Matt Harbor. The editors brought me on board, I guess, fairly early on in the process, along with Charles Willis, who I believe is Mike Willis's nephew, to be involved with the music editing part of the hymnal. So it was essentially Craig Roberts, one of the editors who couldn't be with us, and then Charles and me, and then but also Charlie Couchman in very prominent role in that as well. But we were mainly tasked with the music editing side of things. My basic instruction from more than one person is I need to be brief. So we're going to go through this in probably 15 or 20 minutes. But this is going to be one of the aspects of the hymnal that will not be as immediately apparent to everyone. You know, some people who don't read music or do not read music as well as maybe a professional musician would or something like that. Some of these edits are going to be a little bit more subtle, not necessarily quite as overt as the phrase notation or some of those other things that were talked about yesterday. But there have been some very good reasons and some very important changes made that are worth talking about now. The first thing that's probably most important to talk about is that the music editing followed a policy. This was not a haphazard thing. It was not sort of on a whim or following any individual's preferences. This was a policy that was developed with the board, the editorial board in mind. So a lot of people were involved in the procedure before a single note was ever edited. That's one of the things that we're wanting to emphasize this week. Along with that, this policy of music editing that we followed was very much about restraint rather than experimentation. That was a conscious decision up front, is that we were not setting out to edit as much as we could to make things look as much as we would like them to look. Great restraint was used, and we'll talk more about what that actually looked like in terms of the editing in just a moment. And the third thing that was most important about our music editing policy is that we were going to be most cautious with the melody. Now, here again, as we're going to start making some musical distinctions that not everyone necessarily is going to be as interested in, but the important thing here is if you don't know what you sing when you're singing a hymn, you're probably singing the melody. The melody is what you learn first when you're learning a piece of music, particularly a hymn. The melody is what carries the song. It's the memorable part of the music. And so we wanted to make every effort to make that as restrained as possible in the changes that we made. So the melody was considered more sacred, if you want to put it that way, than some of the other things. So we made every effort, and only in extreme cases was that even altered. But again, we'll look at some specific examples in just a moment. Any question about those three points before we move on? Fairly straightforward. Well, let's talk then, first of all, about the melody, and specifically about the melody lines. What I'd like to do now is I'd like for us to just sing a familiar song from memory, and we'll all sing the melody on this together. Does someone have a pitch pipe and could blow an A flat?
I lost mine this morning. I've been looking for it. Just guess at it.
I see one being.
No, that's right.
A flat.
I love thy kingdom, Lord, the house of thine abode. The church, our blessed Redeemer, saved with his own precious blood.
Let's go ahead and stop right there. I know we were really getting into that, but that last line, her walls before thee stand, I want us to look at something here and try to break that down just a little bit. The sheet music that we have seen in not just this hymn, or not just the hymnals that have been used recently, but many of the Brotherhood hymnals over the last few decades, this is actually the way it's written. So if you do read music, you'll notice that what it actually does here is, I love thy church, O God, her walls before thee stand. You notice it goes down. What you'll also probably notice immediately is that what I sang is not what any of us have ever sung, ever grown up singing. So this is what's always been printed, and yet it's never been what's sung. So sometimes if you get someone singing the song for the first time who's trying to sight read it, and then people who've been singing it for years, you're going to hear a divergence in those two things. So one of the things that was important for us to identify was certain hymns that have been sung completely different from the way they're written since they were written. And we looked for consistent themes in some of these hymns like that. So the way that this one has actually been sung is the way that we just sang. On that walls before, we actually go up instead of down. And so in keeping with our intention to make what we call a populist hymnal that reflects what people actually sing, that was actually a rare melody change that we made. And not because we liked it better, but because that's actually what is being done anyway. So that's one instance in which we would actually make some changes to the melody, although we would normally not do that. So the version that's going to be in Psalms, Hymns, and Spiritual Songs is what is most commonly sung. And this, by way of note on this one, this may actually also be the original version. We're not quite sure, but on the website, the Cyber Hymnal, which has the original versions of many, many older hymns, this is actually the version that you will find, or a version that you will find.
What hymnal did we find this in, Steve, from Churches of Christ?
Something like the Majestic Hymnal. I mean, Austin Taylor hymnal.
It was something that... Yeah. People learned it from that.
Right.
They didn't just make it up.
Right. Like people got this from somewhere. That's the important thing to understand. So a lot of this is not just us changing to the way people have been singing it wrong, but it's actually reintroducing something very old. So that's another important point that we want to introduce. Right. So there were good reasons for us to do this. Let's take another example. Let's sing this from memory. If I remember, this is in what, B-flat? You can get a B-flat. Might just want to keep that handy, Steve.
Take the name of Jesus with you, child of sorrow and of woe.
Okay, we'll go ahead and stop there. That second line, child of sorrow and of woe. Very easy to sing, very smooth. Now what you'll notice is that's not what's written in most of our hymnals again. What actually is written here is, take the name of Jesus with you, child of sorrow and of woe. Very pretty. It's just we never sing it that way. So, again, a dilemma, a quandary there. Now, actually, Austin Taylor's version, there is an old printed version that does what we say. And so since that's the version that everyone uses, we decided, again, to go ahead and use that. So, again, another instance where we actually would change the melody line. But, again, the point we want to emphasize is there is precedent for this in older hymnals. Any other comments from the editors on that?
And it's a change that people won't realize.
It'll be
right.
Right.
We're talking about things that most people are. It's not going to jump off the page because this is what we think we've been doing anyway. So.
I remember an experience I had with one congregation where we had a song leader who said, "You're singing this song wrong," and he went through this whole thing and got us to doing it right, and then. As soon as he moved along, we went right back to singing the old way.
And frankly, that's a big reason we change these things, is to keep these sticklers for music from messing up worship. I mean,
right. There is a pick your battles type thing that we're considering here.
And they won't throw a big stink about it.
Right.
And everything's easy.
Right. And we're not going to spend our whole time doing this, but we want to give a couple examples of why we would do things like this. But these are changes most people do not and should not notice because it will just go right along through. We're just trying to appease the sticklers. Now, let's. This one makes a slightly different point. Let's go ahead and sing this from memory. Can I get another A flat? I realized I told you the wrong key last time. But.
I want to be a worker for the Lord. I want to love and trust His holy word. I want to sing and pray and be busy every day in the vineyard of the Lord.
Okay, that's a very singable melody, isn't it? It has a great lilt to it, a great beat to it, a great rhythm to it. Now, what you'll notice, though, in most of our printed versions is that rhythm that we sang that's so catchy is actually not the rhythm. We sang it with kind of a bounce to it, and what is actually written is, I want to be a worker for the Lord. It's very staccato like that, and very all the notes are the same length, whereas we naturally put more of a bounce into it. So this is actually what we're singing is the dotted rhythm. And so we, in this case, since almost no one sings it the way I just sang it a moment ago, we just went ahead and did what people were doing anyway and put the dotted rhythm in there. It's not actually changing any notes at all, but it's just introducing the rhythm that is being sung anyway. And I hope that difference makes sense. And so in this case, no notes were actually changed. It was just the rhythm that was natural to the melody anyway. So this sort of change was made by congregations over the years, and most people will not even notice this difference because it's what we sing anyway. Now, there was another aspect of the melody editing that we had to deal with, and that was we found a lot of not just new melodies, but old melodies, good melodies, that in their present form as we could find them were not salvageable for whatever reason. This could be any number of reasons, but what we were actually able to do in some of these cases was to reintroduce to the church some melodies that had fallen out of general use by just making enough changes to them where they would be usable and catchy and likable and could be fitted in many cases to new words and to form essentially a new hymn. And so in some of these cases, we won't actually look at some of these because most of these are not familiar to most of us. But you'll notice, at least on the first example here, Piety New, there was a hymn tune called Piety, and we made enough changes to it to where it's still recognizable as the same melody, but it's in a much more user-friendly format and called it Piety New. The same with this German one that I won't try to pronounce, and Peterborough. So, and some of these were good enough that we felt that we could attach them to several different sets of lyrics. And so these last two examples you will see attached to three or four hymns, I believe. Good melodies, but they just needed enough tinkering to where we actually had to touch the melody when we normally would not have done so. The purpose in all of these was not just to appease our own preferences, but to make these good melodies singable and reintroduced to a wide audience. Any other comments from the editors on that? Have I left anything out? Well, another thing is key changes. We won't spend too long on this, but I imagine a lot of song leaders are already very well aware of this problem. There are certain songs that everyone likes to sing, very good hymns, but in their present key, either the basses are just barely growling out the notes, or the sopranos, the people singing the melody, cannot hit the higher notes. And so in many cases, we were able to just make a very simple key change. No notes, no rhythms, nothing is changed. But we simply change the key to where more people will be in a comfortable range when they sing it. Just as an example, anyone here know the hymn, Remember Me, O Mighty One? Got a handful of people, mostly editors, that know it, but it's been around a good while. It's a great hymn, sort of that storm metaphor when storms around are sweeping. Remember me, O mighty one. Just a great uplifting chorus. But the problem in the is both in the verse and the chorus, there is a high F at the top of the soprano staff there, and many people are just really strained to hit that. And so what we found was we could actually lower that a whole step, and the basses were not having to sing too low. So it was sort of a why not sort of thing. So nothing that would be discernible, nothing that would even offend any of the purists who would like to keep these hymns exactly the same. So there was really a win-win situation in these cases. So the song leaders are going to be more likely to choose it because they can sing it. The people are going to enjoy singing it more. So that's an easy change. And there's a little bouncy graphic that shows you what note was a problem. Folk arrangements. We've talked already previously in the week about folk music and what that category entails as opposed to some of the other contemporary or modern, some of those other categories. And a lot of these folk arrangements are tunes that were originally folk songs, and they were attached to secular lyrics. But then at some point along the way, whether by people like Ray Vaughan Williams or somebody like that, were attached to hymn lyrics. We followed a slightly different policy with folk arrangements than we did with some of the other types, the other genres of music. You don't need to know a whole lot about music to see this next point, but I think one thing that we were looking for is just what we sometimes call busyness in an arrangement. If it was overly busy and just looked kind of messy and a lot too many parts were moving and the music itself was becoming a distraction from the lyrics. So that's one of the things we were looking for in some of these. If you'll just notice what all the stuff going on in this first version. I mean, if you sing bass and looking at those lowest notes, I mean, you're singing a different note just about every time. It's all up and down the scale. So then look down at the edited version in the bass line in particular. Whereas you had all these different changes going on, now in the bass you have a do, then a fa, a so, a do, a fa, a so, a do. Very easy, very singable. And the great thing is it sounds very much like the original. I mean, just you really, unless you were really listening hard, you couldn't hear a difference in these two. So it's clean sounding. It's going to be much easier to learn, to sight read for people who are learning this for the first time. And so the result is that we were able to attach one of these New English Renaissance hymns. I'm sure that category has been described this week already. High quality hymn lyrics to this, and we believe that this will be a well liked and well used hymn. So in some cases, we just needed to take something that was unnecessarily busy in these folk arrangements and simplify it for congregational use. And this was something that we felt a little bit more free to do with these folk arrangements than with some of the more standard Anglican-style tunes, because folk arrangements come in 100 different varieties, and most of these tunes have already so many different arrangements, there's not a standard one in use. And so we were able to pick an arrangement that would sound like the original but would be much simpler in its chord structure and in its harmony. And that's what we're talking about with these folk arrangements. Any questions about that? And I will say about this one, the melody was not altered. We're getting into really more harmony issues than melody. The melodies in most of these cases for these folk hymns were not touched at all. This is simply for the parts, for people that like to sing the parts. One of the more important examples for us was the old hymn tune, Kingsfold. This is originally, in its most original form, as far as we can tell, this was a folk song, an Irish folk song called Star of the County Down, which some of you may have heard of. Ray Vaughan Williams came up with the current version that's in a lot of hymnals in the denominational world called Kingsfold. It's a beautiful, beautiful arrangement, and we had it attached to about 3 or 4 hymns, I believe, but we noticed that the people were still having trouble singing it, and this is after we had already given it a makeover in terms of the harmony. But if you'll just notice the busyness of that arrangement up at the top versus the clean looking alto, tenor, and bass on this edited version, that's sort of what we're going for. What we ended up doing with this one is really getting it back more to the original. Ray Vaughan Williams loved complexity. He was a great arranger, but he did love to introduce complexities that were not in the original. So what we actually ended up doing with this one is sort of creating a hybrid version between Star of the County Down and Kingsfold that was actually closer to the original simplicity of the original tune and removed some of those unnecessary complexities that had been introduced by Vaughan Williams. And so we believe this one now is going to be very singable to most sight readers, people singing the harmony. What we're wanting to do with these is take out the big intervals, the big jumps, the things that are going to distract from worship. That's again, the goal in all of this. Original sounds. This is maybe one of the most important things for the policy of the music editors is retaining the original sound. I can't tell you how many dozens or hundreds of times that Craig emphasized that to me and Charles. We are looking to retain the original sound to the point that, you know, we could have been working on a tune for weeks or months and then be told finally, well, it doesn't sound enough like the original, so we go back to starting from scratch. And that's just the attention to detail and attention to preserving that original sound that we were following. The reasons we did this, we believe this really is the role of a professional editor, is not to impose our own sound upon the music, but to try to make it sound as much like the original. Many good hymnals out there have kind of fallen into this trap eventually of all of the editor's arrangements of these different hymns end up all sounding the same because one editor or just two editors or three editors are arranging all of them the way that they would like them arranged, and so they all just end up having one flavor, one voice. We wanted to preserve the diversity and the variety of all these different styles in this hymnal, so we tried to take a minimalist approach to where if we make changes, they're only changes that still sound like the original change. And believe me, that's a hard balance. That's a hard thing to preserve. And so that's why so much work went into this, is coming up with an arrangement and then paring it down and pulling it back as much as we could to where you almost couldn't tell that any changes had been made, but it's still easier to sing. This was the request of our editorial board, to touch these hymns as little as possible. There's a reason that most of these hymns have been preserved at this point, and it's because there's something that's already very good about them, and we didn't want to be messing with that and make it all sound like the way we like to arrange things. There's some of these new, what we've been calling Getty hymns, Getty Townen hymns, have great scriptural content, very powerful lyrics. But some of the music, you can tell it was written in a very contemporary instrumental style. Not as much attention was paid to arranging this music for congregational use. And so in these cases, we didn't actually arrange them the way we would have liked to arrange them. We touched them up just enough, changed just enough notes to where people can sight read them and sing them and learn them and enjoy them. But they still sound very much like the original, very singable. So in some cases, we had to make difficult choices. We would have said, well, we would have liked to put in a minor chord here or this or that. We think that would sound better. But we actually restrained ourselves and didn't arrange them according to the style guides that we might have used ourselves for our own hymns. So that was an important aspect of our editorial policy on some of these newer songs like O Church Arise, which is the one that's represented here. Anglican tunes is kind of a different category. These are some of the ones like Crown Hymn with Many Crowns, Holy, 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 I guess would fit into that category. Very stately, it's just a very distinctive style. And these were essentially not edited, first of all, because in most of the cases there was no need to. Or in another case, because the arrangement has just become so standard, even if it is difficult, like A Mighty Fortress might be an example of hard music that's become so standard that we didn't want to touch it. But we felt like even tweaking those, even if they were difficult, would ruin it for many people who have grown up singing it that way. And so that was we had a very different, more stringent policy on these types of tunes than some of the folk arrangements. If these were tweaked at all, it was just for voice leading purposes only, meaning just helping to preserve a natural flow of what you're wanting to do anyway with the harmony. And this happened on very rare occasions. For example, there was a very, very wonderful piece of music, Heiferdahl. The original composer, Pritchard, had the version that he wrote, then Vaughan Williams did his thing to it. And so what we actually ended up trying to do is do a hybrid arrangement that incorporated both of those instead of arranging it so much that it ended up sounding like something completely different. So again, not what we necessarily would have done, but something that preserves the original sound for a new generation. And the only time in which we would introduce a new arrangement to these types of hymns is if there was no standard. And if there was no standard arrangement, if there were four, five, or six different arrangements, that's when we felt we could step in and come up with essentially a new arrangement and put the word arranged at the bottom. But in generally, these were not touched. These were tweaked, if anything. So very much more strict policy for these Anglican tunes. I believe I'm at the end of my slides. Any questions about any of the music editing policy? Who am I turning it over to? Do you have a presentation?
No, I don't.
We can leave that up there. I like it.
Even if you don't know anything about music, you can see that the summary of that is the policy for changing things was conservative. That we didn't want to get a reputation for messing with things, for messing with music, which some hymnals have done and have a reputation for that. That, you know, Steve calls it monkeying. Why did somebody monkey with this bass? You know, I'm used to singing it, and then all of a sudden it goes all over the place. And we did it when necessary, and you know, a lot of attention was paid to the original sound, like the chords of, you know, the original ones. A big deal, and I don't understand half as much of this as Matt does. But you can change a lot of notes, maintain the same sound by maintaining the chords. You know, you just move, give parts other notes in that chord and things like that. Is that right? Is that correct, Matt? Anyway, make it easier. Yeah, that's... go ahead.
One thing, when Matt says this wasn't changed to suit how any of the music editors would do it, I mean, Matt has written a number. What do you have, four tunes in here or more? I think it's four. So, I mean, he likes good music.
Oh, yeah.
But the point is, we didn't alter this to fit what Matt thought or Charlie or Craig or anybody. They tried to keep it as original as possible and leave it singable.
Yeah. And when we'll get off music here in a minute, but when we change things like those melodies and the timing sometimes, we did that when it was for all practical purposes, it was universal. That this is the way every church we've ever heard has sung this. And so another way to look at that is we didn't edit anything. The edits were already made. We just put them down on paper. And in those cases we saw, it wasn't a surprise why people sing like that, because somewhere back here, this is the hymn book they were using when they learned it, and it changed, and nobody ever changed the way it was sung, because it's just, you know, that melody was handed down. Nobody's really reading the music. And there were cases when there were things that are universal as far as Churches of Christ, non-institutional ones, like Abide With Me. Like, there's a half step in Abide With Me in that melody that we never heard it. I've heard some One Cup brethren sing that correctly. I was at a funeral, and I was amazed. But we didn't change that, because Abide With Me, you don't mess with that. You know, because people, when, you know, people, we have people from denominational backgrounds, and, you know, we convert them, and one of them said to me one time, how come you all don't sing Abide With Me right? You know, and we don't want to change what somebody knows is correct. And so there were all, you know, I guess it's a case by case thing, whether we did that. As far as lyric editing, I don't have a presentation. I thought about making one, but I thought it was just too overkill. Our approach was conservative.